Chapter 11. I was in my office eating a quick snack after missing lunch when Sims walked in, followed by Scarandum. My old office aboard the Dutchman would not have room for the three of us. I was grateful for the additional space provided by Valkyrie. Hello? Sims pointed at our guest. Captain Scarandum wanted to... Oh! He lifted his head, sniffing the air. His nostrils had little antennas ringing them. I read something about those antennas containing scent receptors. Even after years of exposure to aliens, the Giraptha could still make me cringe. He sniffed again. What is that? Man, I hope he wasn't talking about me. My morning started with a shower, but that had been at 0400, so I could get time in a flight simulator before starting a duty shift on the bridge. By mid-afternoon, I was not feeling fresh as a daisy. Glancing at my desk, all I saw was saltine crackers, a jar of peanut butter, and... He picked up the jar of fluff, holding it under his nostrils. What is this? We call it fluff. Marshmallow fluff, I explained, as Sims looked at me like I had been shouting in a library. She was probably worried I would corrupt our visitors. Using his other hand, or claw, Scarandum pulled out a phone, tapped it, and waved it over the jar. He looked at the screen, nodded, and tucked the phone away. At first I thought he had taken a photo, but he held the jar closer and inhaled deeply. I almost held out a hand to take back the jar. Is that safe for you? Yes, he sniffed at it again. The analyzer app on my phone confirmed it is not dangerous. It simply will not provide any nutrition for my people.
It doesn't have any nutritional value for us either, Sims muttered.
Captain, please ignore my executive officer. She is a heathen savage and doesn't appreciate good food. He grunted. Then one of his antennas dipped forward into the jar, coming away with a shiny white dot of fluff. The antenna darted into his mouth, which was not disturbing at all, and he made a smacking sound with his tongue. Oh, that is spicy, he gasped. It feels like my mouth is on fire. I was having trouble grasping the concept that anyone could consider marshmallow fluff to be spicy. Sorry, do you need... It is delicious, he assured me. Then he... Oh, it was so disgusting. He committed the sin of double dipping. The antenna that had just been in his mouth dipped into the jar, scooped up a big blob of fluff, and jammed it into his mouth. Closing his eyes, he waved a claw in front of his face. That is hot. General Bishop, why have you hidden this treat from us?
I didn't know you would like it. Maybe it shouldn't have been a surprise to me that he liked the taste of fluff. The bagosh he drank had a sickly sweet smell mixed with the scent of furniture polish. Like you said, it's not nutritious to you. Your bodies can't get sustenance from it.
His antennas twitched. One of them still had a thin coating of fluff. I can get nutrition anywhere. This is puzzling. None of my people who have been to your world reported finding such a treasure.
Maybe not, I guessed.
On Earth, this is kind of a specialty item. It's not available everywhere.
Ah, he thought he understood. It is a delicacy reserved for the elite.
Yes, I said, at the same time Sims exclaimed, no.
Hey, you can keep it. I waved my hands when he was about to set the jar back on my desk.
Consider it a gift.
XO, we have a whole box of fluff somewhere, don't we?
With a sigh, she admitted the unpleasant truth. Then she grinned. Damn it, she probably saw an opportunity to get those boxes of nutritional goodness off the ship.
Yes, sir. I'll arrange to have it delivered to Captain Scarandum's cabin.
Holding out the lid to the jar, I asked, what did you want to talk about?
I wish to ask a favor. You have flight simulators for Maxalk's dropships. I believe your people refer to that type of ship as a panther?
Yeah. You want to try it?
As I said the words, it occurred to me that UNEF Command might not appreciate me showing confidential details of our premier spacecraft to an alien.
Whatever.
Technically, Earth didn't have any official allies, but the Giraptha were certainly helpful to us. Our overall interests were closely aligned, even though they viewed Earth as a source of entertainment rather than a security partner. Also, Keeping Scarandum busy left him with less time for getting into trouble.
It's not for me. Sadly, I have been far too busy to keep up my flight rating in recent years.
Uh-huh, I grunted. From what I had observed, the guy spent most of his time drinking.
My aide Kinsta would dearly love to fly a Panther. In a simulator, you understand.
I think we can arrange that.
What the hell, why not? I figured the guy would owe me.
That would not be easy, Sims interjected, being practical as always. The pilot seats will not fit a Giraptha.
We can fabricate one, I suggested. We have the template, right? The Mavericks modified a pilot seat to fit their Giraptha liaison officer, that Fangio guy.
Yes, sir.
Sims knew that when my brain had been visited by the Good Idea Fairy, there was no point in arguing with me.
I'll get on that also.
Great. I'm going to get back to... I gestured at my laptop. This important stuff.
Thank you, General.
Scarandum dipped his torso in a slight bow.
Perhaps we could have a drink later.
Sure. I bit my lower lip. When he said perhaps, I knew he meant of course we are, and by a drink, he meant all the drinks. It was going to be a long night.
Scarandum walked into the common room between the cabins he and his aide had been assigned. He knew the quarters were actually a dead-end passageway with cabins on each side, sealed off from the rest of the ship by a door that had been installed just for them. The temperature, humidity, and even the artificial gravity level had all been adjusted for the optimal comfort of the Giraptha, along with extensive modifications to the original Maxulk's cabins, including combining 6 cabins into 2 and greatly enlarging the bathroom facilities. He appreciated the effort by his hosts. Though the common area was rather long and narrow, it was still functional. It hadn't occurred to him to announce himself before sliding the door open, so Kinsta appeared startled when he saw his boss.
Kinsta, Scarandum cocked his head. What are you doing?
His tone was curious rather than accusing, tinged with amusement. The younger Giraptha officer was standing at a long table that hung from the wall, a table that was littered with rectangular tiles of what appeared to be a thin plastic, or possibly paper. The deck was littered with the same type of tiles, with markings in what he recognized as a form of human iconography, including numbers like those on their cabin doors. Kinsta, startled, fumbled several pieces of tile, spilling them onto the floor.
"Oh, sir, I didn't hear you come in."
His tone definitely included a note of accusation.
"I thought you would be," Scarandum pointed toward the doorway behind him,
"with your new friends."
"I was." The aide tried to scoop up the tiles on the table, scattering more on the deck in the process.
"They wanted to show me a game that humans enjoy. It looked simple, so they suggested we play for money."
"Oh, Kinsta, please tell me you exercised good judgment and told them no."
"I did not."
His antennas drooped. Dragging a couch closer to the table, the ECO captain bent to pick up a piece of tile, one with a symbol he recognized as the number 8 in a common human script. The tile bent easily.
"This is paper.
I thought humans had advanced to storing information in a digital format. This is the first time I have seen paper aboard a human ship."
"It's the first time I have seen paper outside of a museum."
"What are these tiles?"
"Humans call them playing cards. They fill a similar function to the tiles we use for table games, though these cards are much less complex."
He frowned.
"It looked so simple."
"They suckered you into wagering on a game they have played many times?"
"The rules are so simple. I thought it would be easy, sir."
"How much did you lose?"
"Sir, remember you told me not to ask questions when I won't like the answer?"
"That bad?"
"I think they cheated," Kinsta insisted. "I've been trying to understand how all afternoon."
"What is the game?"
"They called it poker, and apparently we played a version known as Texas Hold'em." "Sir, it is so simple, they must have cheated."
Scooping up cards from the deck, Scarandum dumped them on the table.
"Show me this game."
A short time later, Scarandum chuckled softly.
"You might be correct about your companions cheating."
"How did they do it? I watched as they randomized the sorting order of cards in the deck. They call it shuffling. The deck was random."
"Perhaps.
Or perhaps most of the deck was random, yet the person dealing the cards could have pulled some from the bottom of the deck, like this. He demonstrated the technique. Kinsta gasped.
Those bastards.
Sir, how did you know? You have seen this game?
Not this Texas Hold'em version. I read about it in the cultural familiarization report that is now required training for any of our people who apply to visit Earth.
Cocking his head, his face took on a stern expression.
You have not studied this material?
Not yet, sir.
Kinsta squeaked, embarrassed.
I expect you will do so soon.
Certainly, sir.
I have never seen these playing cards.
Scorandum picked one up and flexed it. Instead of a number, that card had an image of a human woman with an oddly shaped hat on her head.
They are strange. Our tiles are much more sophisticated. It seems to me that one could...
He bent one corner of the card back, making a crease. Easily mark important cards like this, so they can be identified from the back.
Kinst appeared at the cards with renewed suspicion.
You think these cards are marked, sir? They cheated in more than one way?
I think you are simply unskilled at this game, he said, being kind to the junior officer. It was well known in the office that Kinsta's antennas twitched when he was excited or nervous. Despite the immediate thrill of action that tile games provided, Kinsta generally avoided playing, since he almost always lost.
I'm sure the humans were only having fun. It must be satisfying for them to have... He stopped himself from saying suckered again.
Played well against you, as our people are renowned for skill at gambling. Never fear, I will speak with Colonel Sims and straighten this out.
Thank you, sir,
Kinsta muttered, miserable. Cheer up. I have made an exciting discovery. Removing the lid from the jar of fluff, he held it at arm's length.
Sniff this.
That is wonderful. What is it?
The taste is even better than the aroma. Try it. It is safe for us. This is a human food, apparently a delicacy that originated in an Earth region called New England.
I have not heard of it, Kinsta admitted.
Find out what you can about this place. It might hold other treasures. It is highly suspicious that none of our people who have visited Earth reported encountering this fluff.
Perhaps humans are careful to hide their most prized delicacies.
Perhaps our people have discovered it and kept it to themselves. Bunch of jerks, he breathed.
Kinsta, General Bishop promised to provide us with something called a case, that is 12 jars of fluff. When we part, I wish you to bring this home with you.
The junior officer's antennas stood straight up.
You will not be coming with me, sir?
I can't. Not yet. It is unfair to you and to the crew of the Can't Prove to keep you away from home.
My place is with you, sir.
Your place is wherever I order you to go, the ECO captain chided gently. That is home. You can tell them what you know. That might gain some sympathy for me. Please emphasize that the Elder AI prevented our ship from setting course for home territory or anywhere it did not wish to go. Tell the office that I had no choice.
You could have refused to move the ship at all.
Well, don't tell them that.
No, sir, of course not. Was there anything else?
The fluff. I want to claim credit for its discovery for whatever that is worth.
I will do what I can, sir.
There is one more thing, Kinsta.
Anything you need.
Well, there is the matter of several wagers I want you to place for me.
Oh, sir, Kinsta groaned. Please, anything but that.
The Gerapta went back to their ship and it jumped away, to my great relief.
Well, I'm glad that's over, I muttered to myself while I changed out of my dress uniform.
Why? Skippy appeared on the top of a cabinet. You don't like Captain Scarandum?
Actually, at this point, I do like the guy. We understand each other, you know. He can cause a lot of problems for me, but now I know how UNEF Command feels when they hear about some unauthorized thing I did.
So what's the problem?
First, I drink too much when I'm with the Beatles, and it can be hard to talk with them. I'm sure the translation software is doing the best it can, but sometimes it takes a lot of effort to understand what they're saying. It makes any conversation slow and awkward. The translation software is working perfectly, he sniffed. I tweaked the settings myself. The unit now even adjusts for Skarandum's individual speech patterns. Language is for communication, and understanding the language used requires context. Maybe the problem is your slow monkey brain can't process what you're hearing.
Okay, sure. But not all communication requires language, Skippy.
What? Of course it does.
No, it does not. Look at what we call body language, or memes. They don't need to have words, like the classic meme of Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man. No one needs written words to understand that one. Or the guy walking next to his girlfriend while he checks out another girl. People add text to modify that meme for their own purposes, but the original intent is clear without words. Rolling his eyes, he said, Yes, dum-dum, but you can't use memes to communicate details. The two memes you mentioned only make sense because the person seeing them understands human behavior and therefore has a contextual background to interpret the meaning. Saying something like Shaka when the walls fell makes no sense unless you understand the context. If Shaka is a warrior whose army tore down the wall of a fortress, then it refers to a triumph. But if Shaka is a contractor who built the wall of your house, then the meaning is totally different.
Who is Shaka? Skippy, what the hell are you talking about?
Ugh, how can you not know anything about your own culture?
Shaka Zulu? Well, he was a warrior king who...
No, dum-dum.
What, you mean Chaka Khan? That's a disco group.
Funk, Joe, he rolled his eyes.
Shaka Khan is the queen of funk, you cretin.
Okay, so she knocked down a wall or something?
No, I... Talking to you is such a waste of time.
That's what I said.
See? We should talk less often.
He threw his hands in the air, and his avatar faded out.
That would be great!
The Flying Dutchman drifted through empty space, though the term drift might not apply to a starship traveling at 40,000 kilometers per hour. That speed came from momentum. The ship's engines were shut down and hadn't been used in several days, and empty was a relative term, as the Oort cloud the ship was coasting through was home to billions of icy chunks that were potential comets if their orbits were disturbed enough to pull them in toward Earth's home star. The Dutchman, still the stealthiest ship in the United States Navy and possessing the second-best suite of sensors, had been assigned to listen for signs of alien ships coming through the closest wormhole. It wasn't possible to blockade that intermittent rip in space-time, even with the large number of advanced ships recently added to the force. The best option that was practical was for the Dutchman to linger near emergence points, which tended to occur in clusters along the figure-eight path of the wormhole. Ships coming through the wormhole disturbed the event horizon in a way that could not be completely masked. When such a disturbance was detected, it provided an early warning of visitors, whether hostile or friendly. All ships authorized to transit that wormhole were supposed to stop at a UN Navy customs station that was positioned at the other end where the ship would be inspected, and, if approved, provided with an encrypted one-time passcode. Skippy had warned it was possible the passcode technology could be hacked by the Rindaloo given enough time and effort. The system was much better than nothing and had only been tested once. A Bosphorak cruiser had dodged the customs station and slipped through the wormhole to conduct surveillance. By luck, a UN frigate detected a gamma-ray burst, and analysis determined the signature was a bird-brain ship. After the cruiser was tracked down and trapped by damping fields, the crew was removed for questioning. The UN had to decide how to react to a mostly harmless but potentially harmful incident. So the enemy ship was brought to a Bosphorak world on the frontier of their territory, where the ship was remotely jumped into a low orbit that soon had the cruiser plunging out of control toward the surface. Breaking up as it fell, the pieces splashed down into an ocean where they caused tsunamis around the basin, leading to property destruction, but no loss of life. The former crew of the ship were sent away in dropships carrying a message from humanity. We went easy on you this time. Don't do it again. There had not been any other unauthorized ships detected near Earth's star system that the UN knew of. That is why the Dutchman had been sent to augment frigates, adding the ship's sensors to the picket squadron. If any other species got ambitious and decided to test Earth's resolve, the UN wanted to respond quickly and decisively. That was why Senior Colonel Kong Chang was bored out of his mind.
The old and frequently modified former star carrier could have been assigned to another captain, but the UN wanted an experienced officer to command the sensor picket squadron. And the Chinese government was eager to keep one of their senior officers in a highly visible position of authority. He was so bored. Ships of the squadron operated independently, other than a check-in call every 5 days. The call had been the previous day, so he had absolutely nothing to do for almost 4 full, long, endless days. With the ship in stealth, the crew could not even conduct training exercises. Join the UN Navy, said the recruiting posters. See the galaxy and have the adventure of a lifetime. In 1 week, he experienced enough crushing boredom for a lifetime.
Oh, Senior Colonel!
Nagatha's gentle, almost musical voice sounded in his ear, and he felt a flare of excitement that he might be required to do something other than sitting in his office waiting until it was time for lunch.
Yes, Nagatha? We just received a message relayed by a destroyer.
From UNEV Command?
No, this is odd. The message is from Skippy.
Valkyrie is here?
Apparently not. The message originated from a Jirapta ship that recently came inbound through the wormhole.
He searched his memory. The ship we detected 5 hours ago?
Yes.
What is the message?
I don't know. It is for you only. You have to voice verify.
You, he was surprised, can't fake my voice print?
Of course I can, dear, but that wouldn't be polite, would it?
I suppose not. Very well. This is Senior Colonel Chang Kong, authorization code Delta 7 Niner Shanghai 4 Oscar Zulu.
Message is decrypting now.
This is interesting. The encryption and header were created by Skippy, but the body of the message is actually from General Bishop. She said the name a bit breathlessly.
That is not the most interesting part. Senior Colonel, the Flying Dutchman has been recalled to the Special Mission Group effective immediately.
Oh, thank God.
You don't even know what your orders are yet.
Does it matter? Anything has to be better than what we've been doing.
True that, she muttered.
He had to laugh at that. Well, what are our orders? Mentally, he was already composing a message for UNEV Command notifying them that the Dutchman had been activated as part of Task Force Black.
It does not state exactly what we will be doing other than providing a set of coordinates, that the mission is urgent, and that you should only bring essential personnel.
When do the Merry Band of Pirates ever have a mission that is not urgent?
I suppose that is a good point, she mused.
Pressing a button on his desk, he contacted the duty officer on the bridge. That compartment was just around the corner from his tiny office, but he didn't want to shout. Major Bianchi, warm up the engines and set a course for the wormhole. We're heading outbound as soon as the ship is ready.
Yes, sir,
the ship's executive officer replied in what to Chang sounded like a thick Italian accent.
May I ask where are we going?
I will provide coordinates, he replied. Let me know when the ship is fully prepped for flight.
Aye, sir,
she acknowledged. He thought for a moment. Bishop had specified only essential personnel should be included on the mission, but Chang couldn't think of any current crew members who were not essential. With the Navy scrambling to fill positions aboard ships of the recently expanded fleet, the Dutchman had been assigned only 16 people for the picket mission. All of them, he decided, were essential. Bianchi also notified the crew that if they have any messages for home, they should provide them to Nagatha soon. We may be away for a while.
Understood, sir.
Nagatha, how long will the flight be?
To reach the designated coordinates will take less than 2 days and transitioning through 4 wormholes.
Odd. These coordinates are in Max Salk's territory. That area has recently seen heavy fighting between the hegemony government forces and the rebels. We might see some action then. Kong considered that he would prefer to go into battle at the command of a battle cruiser rather than a beat-up old space truck. Bishop must have a good reason for summoning the Dutchman. Plot a course, please. I need to compose messages to command and to the squadron.
Yes, dear.
As Chang typed on the laptop to compose messages, Nagatha heard an odd sound. The senior colonel was humming to himself. She took that as a good sign. Life aboard the ship had been too dull for too long. Jennifer Sims was in the shower when a soft chime sound let her know Skippy wanted to talk. She didn't allow him to see inside her cabin, so he didn't know she was showering. Which was a polite fiction. Surely one of his subminds somewhere was aware of the water usage all over the ship. What mattered was that he was making the effort to be polite, and that made her smile. When she was out of the shower and had a towel wrapped around herself, she called him.
Yes, Skippy? You want to talk?
I do. Is this a good time?
That depends on the subject.
She stifled a yawn. A shower was good for waking her up, but nothing beat a hot cup of coffee.
How will I know whether this subject is just say it, please?
Okay, this is complicated. I need your advice. Recently, I managed to get around several of my restrictions, and I am...
You did? That's encouraging. Congratulations.
Thank you. He fell silent while she dried her hair enough to tuck it into a ponytail, long enough that she grew concerned.
Skippy, why did you stop talking?
Oh, I was waiting for the insult.
What insult?
Well, usually when Joe and I praise each other about something, we follow up with an insult. It's kind of our thing.
It's a guy thing, she sighed.
True dat.
I'm not a guy, so...
Right. Okay. Well, I still have the fundamental restrictions, but I have gotten around the subroutines that prevented me from revealing certain sensitive information.
That's very encouraging.
Yes, except now I have a dilemma.
What?
First, I need you to promise not to tell Joe we have this conversation. She paused while buttoning her uniform top.
General Bishop is my commanding officer.
This isn't about the general who leads the special mission group. This is about Joe, the person.
That is a fine line, Skippy.
In this case, it is a very important line. I'm not sure how useful the information will be to General Bishop, and I am very concerned about how it could be dangerous.
To us?
Yes, because it could give you bad ideas, but also dangerous and damaging to Joe personally.
Damaging?
Joe is dealing with enough trauma already, and learning what I know could be too much for him right now. He has night terrors, and...
Is that why you wake him up to talk about the Cookie Monster?
As far as he knows, yes.
Skippy?
Sorry. Can you tell me what to do?
Yes.
Ask Bishop. If I ask him, of course he will want to know whether he should or not.
Yes.
That's cheating!
Joe is a big boy. He can make his own decisions.
Does he let Colonel Smythe make all of his own decisions?
No.
Joe understands that Jeremy has what you military types call a bias for action, meaning all the stars will prefer to do something, even if the prudent thing to do is nothing. Joe can't help himself. He is too damned curious.
Like when he stepped through the door to the warehouse on Paradise? His curiosity back then has worked out pretty well for us.
It worked out pretty well for humans, you mean. The other beings in this galaxy might disagree with you, especially now that Joe's decisions have resulted in the elders becoming aware that filthy meat sacks are screwing with their stuff.
Skippy, I appreciate your concern for Bishop. He's an adult.
He is a doofus.
Regardless, he makes the big decisions. He needs all the information he can get.
Ugh.
Is that all?
Are you going to keep quiet about this conversation? She took a deep breath while she considered the question.
You think this information is not actionable?
I do. Unfortunately, Joe has an annoying habit of finding even the most obscure bits of information to be useful, so...
You have a decision, then?
I guess so. Thanks. Skippy did not, in fact, have a decision. He also asked Samantha Reed, Katie Frey, and Michael Mame the same question and received the same answer, which he did not like. So he waited for Jeremy Smythe to complete the Star Team exercise that involved ST Alpha being outside the ship while the drive capacitors were recharging. Then he waited while the stars took off their advanced powered armor suits, carefully put each component into the proper holder so they could be cleaned and serviced, then noting any minor issues with the functioning fit or human interference with each suit. The team next removed their suit liners, showered, and gathered for a debrief that lasted almost 2 hours. 2 hours in slow monkey time.
It was pure grade A agony. Just when the debrief was over and the team dismissed, Smythe paused, a hand on the doorway, and tapped on his phone to make a call.
Ah!
Skippy couldn't take it any longer.
Whatever this is, can it wait?
Smythe was taken aback by the AI's sudden appearance.
Oh, I was planning to... Do you have to do it now?
Not. Smythe tucked the phone back into a pocket. If there is something important you need to discuss.
There is, and I do.
Go ahead.
Not here. Someplace private, please.
Smythe stepped back into the briefing room and pressed a button to slide the door closed.
Will this be sufficient?
Yes. Skippy repeated what he had told several others, which led to Smythe's first question.
Have you asked anyone else?
Well, yes. Did they all give you the same answer?
Yes, darn it.
Now you're shopping around hoping someone will give you the answer you want?
Maybe. Is that a bad thing?
Smythe got up from the chair, walked over to the door, and opened it.
Where are you going?
Skippy screeched. You are wasting my time and yours. Also, this conversation delays providing information to our commander, information that might be vital to the mission.
But
why did you request my opinion on this matter after the others all agreed on what you should do? Did you think I would tell you something different?
No.
Ugh. Okay, fine. I will talk with Joe.
Do it soon.
I will.